You're listening to the BBS Radio Network, and this is Between Two Worlds with Derek White Sky Cloud, healer, author, shaman, paranormal investigator. Stay tuned. Up next is Between Two Worlds with Derek White Sky Cloud.
Cloud, you listen to Between Two Worlds on bbsradio.com. That is the River Jig, and that is played by the fiddle. This is the type of music we actually play as a Métis people. We've actually played, we dance to this music. In the past, what we used to do is we used to actually take all our furniture out of the house, literally, and if you ever actually spend a weekend to have a good time, you have all your friends and relatives come over, especially in the community, the large community that we've had. And that whether it's in Manitoba, whether it's in Saskatchewan, Alberta, British Columbia, or even the eastern part of Canada, or even across the U.S., we've always played this type of music, which is called the River Jig. We used to use the fiddle, we'd play the juice harp, we played the tap spoons, we played with our feet, and we also, whatever we could play, whatever we could get your hands on. Anyways. This week is all to do with the Métis Nation. We're going to be talking about with a good friend of mine. I've actually asked my good friend to come back on the show. He actually is the curator and the orator. I will say the orator because he's the speaker for the Machif Métis Cultural Preservation Society in beautiful downtown British Columbia in Canada. Dale Haggerty is not downtown, but he's actually in the upper part of town, which is actually called Vavenby, British Columbia. And we actually have approximately about 3 to 4 museums now, sister stations, that are actually where our information about our history is out there. And I'm going to actually let you all actually hear it from Dale. Dale's going to be sharing his stories. Without no further ado, Tansy Dale Haggerty.
Tansy, good music, Derek. Thank you also for having me back online again. This is really good.
Thank you
very much.
Now, since we last talked, we always talked about the Métis history, and to let everybody else out there, who the Métis are, can you share us a bit of a brief story, what they mean to us?
Well, our ancestors are our mixed blood people from the first European people from England and France and. They were looking for a new world. They were looking for commodities. They were looking for a new place to expand. Of course, you know, the English have always been doing that, and the French. And, of course, they ran into North America, of course, and they got involved with our native people and had kids, and we're the proud product of the First Nation and the European people. So they say the true Canadian people aren't the First Nation people because the First Nation people were already here. The true Canadian people were the mixed blood people, which were they called Métis. The French word Métis, they would say métis, as they would say, the priest used to use the metis, and the metis word means mixed blood with the Aboriginal and the European. We're going to start calling ourselves Michif people because Métis people are a broad definition until they can come up with a proper definition from who what Métis people are. We're going to call ourselves Michif people, which is...
Now, anybody else out there know out there, we're not mischief people, we're Michif people.
Michif, yeah. And people is our, it's our language, and so it's our, we have a language, and it's called the Michif language. M-I-C-H-I-F is the...
Yeah, which is basically, it's a mix of Ojibwe Cree with the French blend.
It's a dog's breakfast when it really comes down to it, I'll tell you. So, yeah, there's a real mixture of things, and there's different dialects. Some Saskatchewan, northern Saskatchewan, strongly French. Some strong in northern Ontario, it's very Cree and Ojibwe. More mixture, more towards Manitoba, which is Winnipeg. It would be more French or Cree. It's all different areas of our prairie lands where they were became a nation. Have different dialects. Even in Quebec, there's a sense of a Michif language there, and but they won't admit it. But there is, and it's sort of like a secret way of talking. I always thought, you know, that my mom, when she used to speak the Michif language, she used to do it so she couldn't understand what the adults were doing it. Well, she said to me just recently, she said that her parents used to do the same thing because they used to have a lot of secrets and a lot of things hiding behind closed doors sort of thing. So,
yeah. Yeah, wonder why.
But it's, as I never grew up that... I never grew up with the Michif language. It's because of my situation living in the West. And when we were brought up, Mom sort of lost it because she didn't have enough people that she knew to talk the language. So we all lost our native tongue sort of thing as we never knew. So it's unfortunately, but, and it's not an easy language to learn because you have to have some pretty good fast tongue-tying tongues to do this talking because of your dialect and sort of thing. So
yeah.
It's a lot of fun to when I have a friend that comes over and visit us, and he knew a lot of Métis friends when he grew up in Prince Albert area, and he says that, and he gets into that talking of the Michif language sort of thing, and he's really funny to listen to, you know. Because even when I was growing up, I remember that, you know, my aunts, they always, because they all grew up on the prairies, like, and so they never left the prairies, so, and they always talked this funny Saskatchewan talk, and I never could understand why, but then now that I grow up and talk to them, and I figured it was just, they were just living in a different world, but actually they were very lucky that they preserve their own dialect of talking. So, and it's really good to hear it, you know. Like one [S2] Yeah. [S1] Of my favorite aunts things used to say when she used to phone my mom, she used to always answer the phone, and the first thing she'd say, Georgie, is that you? And we always got a giggle out of that, you know, because, phones were very new to us in them days when they first came out. So, yeah, so. Anyway,
well, I got a kick out of my brother-in-law. He'll say, you know, he lives in Alberta, even right to this day. He lives in Alberta, and, you know, we all have an answering machine, and he'll say on there, tell my sister that her brother is here.
Yeah. That's a good one there too, yeah.
What to tell you? Oh yeah, well, by the way, Marina, your brother called.
Oh, there you go. So,
that's typical Métis.
Yeah. So I hope I gave you a little bit of a brief history, but I do have to tell you something. This is a this week we have just finished celebrating it's British Columbia's. We celebrate Louis Riel Week, and British Columbia has recognized the Louis Riel as a national holiday, as well as the Canadian government has recognized that Louis Riel Day is November the 16th. And we had just celebrated it. As a matter of fact, I had the privilege of going to one of the local schools here in Clearwater, British Columbia, at the Raft River School, and putting on a beautiful presentation, and I could understand that the young kids that I was talking to, I know they don't understand a little bit of the political end of it, but I felt that they were getting the gist of the presentation, and it's like some of the kids today, they don't really, it's as bad as we say it is. Is a fifth grader is smarter than the average person?
It's true.
You know, it's we have such a wonderful, wonderful history in Canada, and we don't grasp it. And I was one of them. I realized that later on in my life that, you know, there was something missing. But now that I'm starting to enjoy my history of my the Canadian history, it's fabulous to understand the stories, you know, the conflicts that we had and the struggles that we had, and but you know what, we built a great nation, and guess what? You know, I'm laughing at the American audience here that but you know what, Canada is, you know, the dollar is strong, you know what I'm saying, and I have to laugh, you know, that it took a long time, but you know, it's good, you know. I applaud that, you know, the Canadian people are, with that rich history, that we can still strive to try to achieve what we need to achieve. So, you know, but my personal views about the Canadian dollars is I wish we were all just on a par level, and it would just make, I think, life just a lot easier for everybody, you know, that we could just trade on an even keel, you know what I'm saying?
So. Yeah, but I think it's up to the federal government up in the U.S. to make those decisions, because they don't like to see themselves.
Well, they don't want their investors to lose any more money than they do, eh, you know, sort of thing.
Well, you know, I hate to insult them, but 1812 was one of their bitter days.
Yes, it was. Oh, by the way, you know how the White House actually got white, eh? Because the Canadians came along and burnt it, so they actually had to paint it white because it was all charred for the time. So, anyways, but enough teasing of our brother neighbors. I really applaud that I'm not as like that. I'm God bless that we've got the American people beside us. And as far as I'm concerned, they're just as people just like us, you know.
Well,
we don't live
in about it, Dale, we do have the Southern Métis. They actually, there's an organization called the Southern Métis.
Yeah. The Creole people.
The Creole, yeah. And a lot of them, some of the Creole actually are from the, say, New Orleans, Mississippi, in those areas. So we do have those type of people in that area. They speak, they call themselves Creole. And also we have a different variety, because don't forget, you also, we were talking about this before in history, that the Red River does not just stop at the end of Canada, but it actually ran straight through into the United States.
Oh, it really does. It really does. And not only that, they use not just the Red River, they use all rivers for transporting goods up and down. I mean, you got to remember, you know, they didn't go out and start building highways, you know, till later on, you know, so you got to really think about it. So you had the canoe people, which were either Métis or mixed blood people or Indians, that would be traveling up and down these rivers, and eventually, you know, they came up with the paddle wheelers and all the other stuff. But we also had a boat. It was called the York boat. It was also one of the older boats that was ever used on rivers, because it was a flat-bottom boat, and they could carry a lot of goods on there, you know. And once they got into some rapid areas, they'd have to take this York boat out, and I'll tell you, they would have to put it on logs and portage it through some pretty wicked land, and then they finally get back on the rivers where the rapids were off and carry the goods back down. But boy, they were persistent people.
Definitely. Cool. You know, here's something else that I also want to let everybody know. I'd like to welcome all coming into chat rooms. We also have the BBS Radio chat room. I'd like to welcome you all in the room today and also the Pell Talk chat room, those who are visiting as well. Greetings those to you folks out there. Anyone who actually wants to know anything regarding our history or regarding the Métis or even our Métis brothers and sisters that are out there, if you have any questions or anything you want to say, please give us a call. I want to give you guys these numbers right now. They're toll-free numbers. They're not going to cost you for long distance. So anyway, these are the call, these numbers. Toll-free number is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. That's for the U.S. side. In Canada, we are in the 888-815-9756. It's 888-815-9756. It's amazing how it's just Canada. We have so many eights, and our flag actually has a figure eight on its side. And also with international callers are 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, you know, we always talk, you and I always chat about our Métis history. You and I, like, I mean, I'm actually one of the culture directors. I'm part of your, I'm part of the group with Machif Métis Preservation Society. Another reason why I wanted to get you on here, because, you know, we don't really have enough of our people really knowing that we do have a museum and it actually is access to that we can actually do presentations in, whether it's schools, whether it's universities, even in the communities, and we also been doing powwows and Métis gatherings, including Métis Allure Real Day on November 16th. But we also have something else that's coming up too, Dale. I know we were discussing this before, but we actually have a bus that will be start to be renovated to the point where we actually be able to travel that sometime soon.
Yeah, it's going to be the mobile museum, as we call it. And the target thing is, it's of course I'm doing most of the work, and unfortunately I'm trying to survive as well. So it's going to take just a little longer to do this, but I am going to convert a 14-seat van. I have to try to make it so it can be handicap accessible, and eventually my target goal is to go to the communities, northern B.C., southern B.C., and take these northern islands or wherever they need to go, even across the line if they allow us to go across the line to put on presentations according to what I'd like to do. Is I also would like to go across Canada with this bus. And eventually, you know, to go to the communities and give them some sort of an insight and open people's minds about who we are and stuff like this. And
yeah,
that's the intention to do this. And it's a long, long goal, but it's one step at a time, they say. And once we have the bus now and it is starting to get stripped apart inside eventually we will be, I'll be building the cabinets and putting some stuff. But we're also going to be affiliated. This is the good part about it. It's, as well as us being a mobile, we're going to try to see if we can find ourselves a little base place where we can actually have most of the artifacts. Because the artifacts that I carry around, some of these artifacts belong to the Machif Historical Society. They were either purchased or some of them were donated. And, of course, a lot of them were purchased by me when we were in Dale. My wife and I went on a honeymoon, and we went all over Saskatchewan and Alberta on a find, looking for things, and we come up with a lot of stuff. So,
so you took everybody's trade blankets.
Exactly, you got it. You know, so what we're going to do is we also got some of our stuff that is on display in Alberta right now, and we are now affiliated with the Delia Historical Society in Delia, Alberta. And now we are making a big protocol agreement with the St. Albert's Museum. It's called the Musée St. Albert's Historical Society there. And we're also going to try to reach the either the Saskatchewan or the one of the groups in Saskatchewan or Manitoba that will want to be involved. And we're going to try to create the four directions. So we have the east, the west, which is me, Delia, which is the south, and at St. Albert's, which would be the north. And we are going to make ourselves the Machif Society, cultural society, ring. And we are going to try to create a goal so that we can all help each other and we can share our some of the artifacts, like some of from, and we can be transferring artifacts back and forth to one museum to the other museum, so everybody in the areas can all have a chance to take a look at them. So, but I will have a mobile as well that I will be actually trying to target and go into the communities where some of our elders can't reach, and that's one of my dreams to go for it. And right now, I'm trying to work on some words to put a protocol agreement to bring these four museums together. Culture is going to be the only glue that makes us stick together. Politics are destroying us today. It's too many greedy people out there that are actually not, they are actually being brainwashed by the politicians out there thinking that they're going to be taken care of and fighting. And all it is a power trip to find out who's going to be number one chief. And so for my advice to everyone out there that's listening, culture, find yourself in your own culture, because that's going to be your soul, that's going to be your inspiration, and that's going to be the one that's going to be, like I said, it's going to be the glue that holds you together. So,
well, my work in my life, actually, I call it culture first, money later.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the thing is that you want to, like you said, I agree, you want to train, you want to teach the children about our history. I'm not, I mean, we're not put here for one reason, having to say, well, the you know, like, even though we've got many times we may approach different kind of people in the government to say, well, we want to put this program together for the kids. The first thing they're going to say to them, the first thing they're going to say to themselves, well, what's in it for me?
We're not asking about you.
We're just asking if you got funding for us to help us with this program.
Yeah. You know what? We're going to try to go around that. We're going to try to, instead of going after the government for these things, because it's just red tape anyways. It's just an excuse for them not to give us any money, but, you know, you still have to apply for it. So
yeah,
what we're going to try to do is we're going to go try to go after some corporate sponsors, and that's the way I think that we are only going to survive out there today, is through the corporate sponsorship. And right now, it's green, and some of these corporations right now are on the defense, and they want to do the right thing. They're feeling that they're not doing the right things, and eventually we're all going to be ending up going back to the ways of the traditional ways. And you know, we have to look after our lands, and we have to look after our elders. Our elders are very important today in our life, and you know that we keep forgetting that these elders are our knowledge, and you know, we just keep this, oh well, we'll just put them in a home, we'll just do this and we'll do that, you know, and we keep forgetting that, you know, we need our elders to be there for us, you know what I'm saying?
Well, definitely. I mean, here's someone else we want, you speaking of elders, I mean, we have a good friend that just had passed away a few months back, who was actually the original man that ran the Michif Métis Preservation Society, was Pat Reed.
Yeah, my mentor, he was the one that actually, you know, was the one that did making me do a lot of testing when the elders used to come in. He used to always come up to me, and he used to say, Dale, he said, do you remember this elder? And I'd say, yeah. And he says, what kind of a story would he have? And I'd have to repeat the story. And then, you know, and Pat, God bless his soul, used to say to me, he said, you're a real person that really pays attention. And he says, that's very important today, for people to pay attention to our elders so we can carry our stories, because we haven't got enough people out there writing books. We haven't got enough people there taking notes and wondering why our artifacts today are being sold on the auction block and brought over to Europe and we never be able to see it. They're all in private collections. You know, this is our history, and, you know, it's even finding out, you know, where our ancestors are buried. We don't even know some of this information. You know, churches are being burnt, our ancestral trees are, you know, if we don't talk to ourselves, they don't know who, what line they are coming from. There's so much confusion out there, so...
Yeah.
You know, we have to have this respect for our elders so we can talk to them and find out what the traditional ways. You know, there's so much medicine out there that we don't even, that we all depend on the pharmaceutical companies. And yet, you know, it takes only a few things that if you walked in a bush, you know, to get rid of a headache, or if you got a major cut that would stop the infections. Yeah, but all this knowledge is all going down the wayside, and you know, it's, you know, they're taking things away from us and we're all depending on these companies, pharmaceutical companies sort of thing, for this stuff, you know. So,
well, two things. One thing is, we actually are very spiritual people. You know that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the Métis were medicine keepers as well. They did live in teepees, not just always.
Yeah, there was the Métis that lived in teepees. There was the Métis that lived in cabins. It was all depends. A lot of our religions and spiritualities that we there was a lot of church going Métis people there, and unfortunately, we found out later what some of the churches had done to some of the people, and it's unfortunately, you know, you can't say I'm sorry for some of the stuff you say. There's no way, and you know, giving money to the people is just like, you know, that doesn't pease them off either. You know what I'm saying? But we had our spirituality you know, and we had things that, you know, you were talking about music again. There was guitars, and they used to make their own musical instruments. It was amazing that, you know, that, because, you know, they didn't have access to any of this stuff. So, hey, they'll whittle themselves a guitar, or they'll whittle themselves a fiddle, or,
yeah.
You know, and it's amazing what some of the pictures that, you know, we have in our archives I know a gentleman right now, he won't lend it to us, but he says that he has an original fiddle that his grandparents made, and I'm telling you that, you know, to get something like that, it's almost priceless right now, so.
Well, you may have to do a sneak up.
Yeah, I honestly asked him to put it on loan, and
well, you know what we can do, Dale? We can actually do a trade.
Yeah. we could do a trade, yeah.
What did we do for
that's
a living?
That's trading. How we survived, actually, was our trading techniques. You know, we'd have access to the fort, so we could get some copper pipes, pots, and pans, and knives and stuff like this, and we would trade for furs and stuff like this and meat and learn things, and that's, we were big traders, real entrepreneurs, as we say. I think that was the word. We're free people. We're our own bosses, as they say.
Well, even though we were considered as a forgotten nation or forgotten people, now the reason why some people may not understand the definition of it, but it was actually, it was through the history of how it came about when the Europeans came into our country, our, where it was either Canada or the United States, and when they came here, they were starving. They could not survive very well in the cold winters, so basically it was the First Nations that housed them and that fed them and took care of them. And they also married them to their own daughters. And that's where basically this whole thing started. It wasn't by the Europeans' request to marry their daughters. It was because they offered their daughters to take care of them, to house them, to feed them, and to give them children.
You betcha. And you know another thing, that you know that Hudson's Bay, the company Hudson's Bay, forbidded for their employees to marry the First Nations because but on the other hand, here comes the French, which is the Northwest Trading Company. They encouraged it because they knew that for survival reasons, if they got to know the chiefs and the First Nation bands and their intermarriages and stuff like this, that they could build up a nation that they can do commodities and selling and big things like this, and that's what it was all about. It was a trade. They had trade policies way before this trade policy between the United States and Canada and Mexico. You mean that's not a trade policy. That was just some corporation making some big bucks on some backs of some people. That's all that was all about, you know.
Well, if you think about it, Northwest Trade was always in competition with Hudson's Bay anyways.
Always.
Pretty well that's where, you know, one person wants to control one side of it, and they always are always in competition. But you know what? I remember, I don't want to get too negative about it at times, but, you know, we did have a lot of hardship, including the trading sense of it, because they also used to, you mentioned before, one time they actually were, you were forced to have a rum tab, to actually have an alcohol tab, and even though you didn't want to drink the alcohol, but they forced it on you because you were only allowed, you were never allowed to pay your bill off completely.
Yeah. Well, they also, I believe, I haven't done a lot of research through that system there, but I have a funny feeling the way I felt it. The Europeans felt that the rum that they used to get, because all the sailors used to have the rum, was to keep disease down. And I think that was the reasons why they started distributing it. But after a while, the First Nation people didn't need rum because they had their own medicines that they could take that could stop the disease. It was, so I haven't done a lot of research on the rum trading about it, you know. But we did have a gentleman just
an antiseptic.
Hello.
Never used to drink all of
them. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman in Alberta. His name was Jerry Potts, and apparently he was trying to stop the alcohol trade because, of course, you know, that's, they were bootleggers, as we call it today, eh?
Yeah.
You get some First Nation drinking, and all of a sudden, you know, you can sure take an advantage of these guys real quick, sort of thing. So that's what the whole idea was. They're out there to swindle and get their money and the furs or whatever they were got their hands on. They were all after that. So
definitely.
Yeah. So
now
that was part of, you know, that was part of our way of learning. You know, we opened our arms in trust, and we, all you got was a knife in the back, sort of thing. And that's some of the things that, you know, we learned later on in our lives, you know. So,
Well, people always, you know, back then we were not always called Métis because they always had a, they also did have a law they passed that you were not allowed to use that name. That's why they used to call us the half-breeds or the breeds.
Yeah, Métis were, if you were coming from the French side and you were a priest, they would call you a Métis, more or less.
Yeah.
Métis, more or less the Métis. But you didn't hear too much about it. I mean, by this time, what are we talking about? The 1900s, the Métis were already being discriminated. The government felt that they were the king of the castle there, and they were just totally tried to destroy a nation of people. So people started to hide their heritage by this time. You know, and it's like, you know, I remember when my mom was telling me about the little story about when she went to apply for a job at the Canada Packers, and I can mention all these things because I got proof of all this stuff. But the first thing that they asked her is if she was an Indian, and of course my mom, you know, not knowing, she denied it. She just said, no, I'm French-Canadian, right, you know, because... And she could get away with it because her last name was Villeneuve. So, I mean, it was easy to get away with something like that. But that's discrimination, and that was in the 40s by this time, you know. So people were hiding their heritage.
Definitely.
But, today, now we can, you can't do that. I mean, you know, we're not going to sit down and let anybody call us this stuff anymore, but... you know, we were proud of who we are and, you know, our ancestors. You know,
when I was up north in northern Alberta this last few months back, I couldn't believe how many Métis in that territory, because that's actually mostly Métis country, mostly Métis in that territory really have not come really forth to be acknowledged as Métis to the government.
No.
They believe themselves of just being, you know, standoffish, but they're saying, well, I know who I am. Do you know who you are?
That's right. Yeah.
But they're not what you call card carrying. They don't have to carry cards. They already know what they can do, who they are. So sometimes people, like even the federal government says, you know, well, do you have a card to prove it?
Well,
you know, it comes to the point where you don't even have to. Why make a big issue about it?
Yeah, you know, the card issue here. You know, it's a pretty smart way of the government doing this, is that they get all these provinces to divide themselves, and then they go out and they sort of try to recruit their leaders that they need to have at the table and give them about $6 or $7 million and say, divide this amongst the provinces, but you can have a national council, you can have this. And what we want you to do is we want you to register all the people that you want, but don't register too many because, you know, we don't want to be feeling sorry for this thing. There was a survey taken in 1982 that there was approximately 1 million Métis people registered, or either that the government had figured out that there could have been a possibility that had something to do with being a Métis person. It was 1 million people. Well, today, you know, what are they trying to do? Even in our own province here, they're trying to say that, they're not recognizing people that are mixed blood people. And, you know, they all have to come from the motherland of the Red River or something like this. Or now they've given it a wider territory, or somebody that had script or stuff like this. You know, a lot of people in Quebec, believe it or not, you know, that you know, they were migrating people. We moved from the Northwest Territories all the way to Quebec and Newfoundland and New Brunswick and all through United States through California.
Well, have you ever had a Quebecer
Oregon,
come all the way down to Alberta to become a Métis?
BC,
no,
and all of a sudden now, where is everybody? You know, they figured there was 44,000 registered at one time, and we're talking about the census now. The Canada Census has stated that there is 44,000 Métis people. Now, if there's 44,000 people, and then there's a little organization that is telling us that there's only maybe 5,000, you know, there's a lot of Canadians out there lying. And, of course, you know, it's against the law to lie in the census, isn't it? You know what I'm saying? You know, you got to fill it out to your best of your knowledge. And, I mean, so who's lying? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I don't know what the game they're playing, but it's a power trip. And it's all about who's going to be the leader, and that's not about who they're taking care of. There's elders right now that need more help, and all our politicians are out there fighting for the wrong things. All they're fighting for is, you know, we're fighting for our education, but yet when you go to apply for education grant, you got to go through hoops. So what's the difference? You know what I'm saying? You know, you might as well just go to the government and say, listen, I'd just like to apply as a person to go back to school, because it's easier to do it that way than to apply through the Métis organization.
But then again, they will just say, well, we'll think about it.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of young ones, right, young people today that still want to get an education. They want to go back to school, and they can't even get that funding because they're having difficulties getting that as well.
Yeah.
Let's go into the artifacts part of it, because I want to go change the story a little bit. We actually have the oldest artifacts so far, which is around 1860s, and that was actually stored away by the English Anglican church and their diocese, and they actually had some of the artifacts put in storage for quite a long time, and then he's displayed in a church. Where was that area, Dale? I remember we'll talk about that story. Where was that area?
We
did that ceremony.
Oh yeah, that was from where the artifacts have actually came from was one. I guess what happened is, you know, some of the artifacts were made by the Métis people, and they were part of the Grey Nuns society in Manitoba. Well, some of these artifacts made their way through the migrations of priests coming through, and they ended up into Victoria. And the story behind the artifacts is that that these artifacts were part of the church that was either taken from families or either given to the families or whatever. They won't tell us exactly where these artifacts came from, but they all ended up at the church area, and they were at one time going to, again, here we go with even the church, you know, that they were going to sell these and put them on auctions, and because the churches were losing money, so they were going to try to recoup some money by putting these artifacts on auctions to get some money. And one of the priests, he was a bishop, and thank God that he stood up and he said, no, we're going to give these artifacts back to the people. And it wasn't just ours. We had five artifacts returned to us, but there was over 350 artifacts that returned to the First Nation people, the Inuit people, and he was determined to do this. So he went out and he sent letters, ads in the paper of communities about artifacts that need to be returned to people. And it took us a little bit of time to get our artifacts together because we had no place to put them. So a lot of the First Nation people, if they didn't have an area where they could designate it to go to a certain museum, for example, the British Columbia Museums, they could go there, or they could go to the UBC museums where they could put them on loan there until these communities have come up with their own way of storing them. And we had the same problem, but when we finally were started our organization with the BC Museums Associations, that was my first task, to go after these artifacts. And within 3 months of pursuing the church and to prove that we were a legitimate organization and we had a society up We got these artifacts given back to us, and but thank God for the bishop. He was quite a person to take a stand up. And it was from the Anglican Church, by the way. It was the Anglican Church of Canada that this was in Victoria. So
that's where you met your wife for the very first time.
Yeah, that's right. A matter of fact, I did there. So
I introduced you both together, and next thing you know, you're both in trouble.
Yeah, I met her for the first time, and I was in La La Land because I wasn't a very good public speaker, and I sure have learned a lot of to do it today. But I had my elder Patrick Reed was supposed to do the master of ceremonies, and he shied himself out. He got himself so nervous, and then of course that's when I had to step up to the plate, and I hadn't done that. And of course,
I got a feeling that Patrick was not really shy. You were in training.
Oh, that's so you knew about it. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying to me, that you knew that I was in training and all this?
I already knew that because Patrick told me. I'm just training.
Oh, yeah, there you go. You see, there you go. Thanks a lot, Derek. You know that, eh? You never told me that before, and I've known you for a long time. But thank you. That it was a good experience for me. And a matter of fact, I think it took me out of my shell to realize that, you know, that I am really proud to be a Métis.
You have a lot of history.
You know, and the funny part about this is I can talk about anything about our culture and the political stuff is because, again, they can't take it from me. It's in me now, and it's too late. And the more that they taunt me, the more I get stronger.
In the community that are, I don't wear, I'm not care if it's Winnipeg or Manitoba or Saskatchewan, Alberta, BC, Ontario, you've got a lot of history in your own family because your great-grandfather was right next to Gabriel Dumont, who you're buried next to him. He's buried next to him.
Well, they're river lots. When the resistance was done for the final time in 1885, my ancestors, my great-grandfather Isidore Villeneuve and his family lived on one side of the river lot of Gabriel Dumont. He actually had two river lots. They called it Gabriel's Crossing. He was actually he had settled himself down and got into a business. And what he was starting a ferry business to cross the North Saskatchewan River there. So he had two river lots there. And of course, on one side was my great grandfather Villeneuve. As we say in the Michif language, and the other one was the Vandal. Joseph Vandal was part of the resistance, as well as my great-grandfather Isidore and his family. Isidore's family happened to escape away from the resistance, but the Vandal people, Joseph was killed, and he was killed after the fact that the battle had stopped. The soldiers still came along, and they were stabbing the Métis, and he died of his wounds. As a matter of fact, he is actually buried in Batoche. He's one of the original 15 Métis that were killed at the resistance in Batoche.
And I want to let everybody else know, it was not a war, it was resistance, because basically
it was a resistance.
They were a right of land.
Yes, it was. It was a land grab. It's like you know, they burn fog. You know, they want to take it and develop it. You know what I'm saying? Well, unfortunately, when in this area, it was called the St. Laurent Settlement, which is with the township of Batoche in it, was the same thing. They the government of the day, the conservative government of the day, John A. Macdonald, sent his cronies down there to try to subdivide and start selling these lots, because that's exactly what he was doing. He was advertising across the Europe that, you know, Canada's open for free, and, you know, come here and you can buy
and
some land.
To the railroad.
And the railway, oh, of course, and he had his pockets.
That was true, and that was it.
Oh, yeah, he had his pockets so thick of money out of that scandal. I don't know how he even got elected again. I just can't understand that. But anyways, that's what it was all about. It had nothing to do with it. And, of course, later on they blamed the religion of the Protestants and the Orangemen and all this other stuff. Well, it was all to do with that as well. And, you know, and all these people wanted to do, and they had the land legally. I mean, it was all script land that was all issued to them, because I've actually seen the documents that my great-grandfather had, and it was issued to him. And in 1864, they got the land in script, because, you know, just after that, all that. So it was legal that they had this, but they just wanted to survey it. They didn't want anybody to have access to the rivers. That's what was the whole idea was.
Basically, too, also, anybody who's been listening to the show, if you guys ever want to make a trip up to Batoche, Saskatchewan, it's B-O-T-C-H-E, Batoche, Saskatchewan, I recommend to go out there to see, because they have a small museum in there, and the display that will show you where the history itself had taken place, where a lot of when this major event had happened. We actually had, during this war, resistance, I call it resistance, but during this resistance, and when MacDonald sent his boys up there, first of all, to work the land, the other part that I was very, discontent at the time, but they were supposed to be sending up the military to go after Gabriel Dumont and Louis Riel. The reason why they went after him, because they were afraid of this man so much that they even had to send the RCMP. And back then, those years, the RCMP were considered a military group. They were not really a police, or more of a militarized police. And there was well over 200-plus RCMP militarized police. And the reason why, there was about 100 people, 100 of those RCMP were killed. The reason why, because there was 17 or 19 Métis, they call them snipers. They were not snipers, they're sharpshooters. These guys are hunters.
Oh yeah, they were the best. I mean, and I'm telling you, they had to, because it was called survival.
Yeah.
You know, you just couldn't go out and get shells or bullet shells. So, you know, if you had to make them yourself, they didn't waste any bullets on anything. So, you know, that was the whole thing. And again, that was a resistance that started it all off. And unfortunately, We lost a couple of Isidore Dumont was Gabriel's brother. He was killed, and he was the first one shot, and it was like they came with their guns ablazing. Unfortunately, you know, that's exactly what they do. They just jump on the bandwagon and start shooting before they even know what was going on. And they shot first, and unfortunately, they lost that little skirmish. And I feel sorry for the people that's going on today. But you know, you got to they tried to negotiate, and of course they didn't want to negotiate. There was no reason to negotiate. They just wanted to go in there and start blazing and try to eliminate everything without trying to talk to people. So
now we've also got more history ahead of that. As you also, oh, we got a caller, I believe. We have a caller coming in. Hello.
Hello. Hey.
Hello. Who am I talking to? Where are you from?
Stacy from Louisiana.
You're from Stacy from Louisiana. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, honey?
Very good. What can I do for you, my dear?
Just my friend of mine recommended me call in, and because she had a good reading and a lot of, you know, I'm into all that stuff, and I'm having a heck of a year, so I thought I'd call and get a little psychic reading here.
Well, right now the show itself is not about psychic readings this week. This is actually, we're interviewing anyone regarding a fellow by the name of Dale Haggerty, who's actually the curator of the Métis Preservation Society. And sorry, I apologize. I'm not doing any readings of this show this week. Next week, yes.
But you can't do it like now for me?
I'm sorry?
You know, Derek, you should do a reading because maybe she could be sent, you know, the spirits could be guiding her.
I'm telling you, that's true, honey, and I can get it because I have a sense like that, and he's so right. Oh, well, Lord, he's right. Okay. can you feel it? Can you feel it, like, through the phone line?
I'm sorry, my dear. My mind's not even there. I'm focused on something else. Honest to God, I am.
You would do this for me, honey, because I'm leaving to go out of town, and I probably won't ever do this again, but... Something I need to do.
I have to apologize. I can't. I'm sorry. My mind's to it. I really don't be upset. If you can call next week.
My birthday's coming up too. It's like next week. So, I'm just, yeah.
You can call me after the show, and I can give you a read.
Okay.
Tonight? Yeah, if you want. Give me a call after the show.
What time is the show ever?
The show's over at 9 o'clock, which is actually the next... 3-4 minutes.
Okay, honey. Well, that's
okay.
Great. Okay, sweetheart. Thank you. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Okay, all right. Bye-bye.
Bye. I know, Dale, you're a really cool guy. You get me in trouble.
Oh, yeah. I'll get you in trouble all the time there, Derek. You know that, eh? You know, sometimes, though, you know, the spirits do guide you to, you know, to talk, you know, and...
Yeah,
no, I know every time you get into a conversation, it's like those two gentlemen that are talking about ghost trains and ghost trails and stuff like that. We really get into an intense conversation to each other, so... Because we enjoy being who we are and we enjoy our culture, so that's why we get involved like that all the time. So.
Definitely. That's the reason why I always like to share the history of the Métis Nation. We talked about it from the very beginning. We've only got a few more minutes left, but there is very little time. There's very little information out there with people that share information. I mean, right now, just to finish off the show itself, I've got my son, for example. My son, I believe, is Métis. His mother is a Davies. He is a Métis, and if he ever is interested himself, I'd like to get him to apply for his own status because I feel that if he ever wants to continue education or if he wants to start his own business, he can actually apply to get a status card so he can actually go to the government and say, look, I need some funding, I'm going to start a new business, or I want to get funding because I want to get my higher my education. This is available within the Métis community, or has it changed?
No, you're still, you know, like I said, you got to, you know, prove that your ancestral tree and all that stuff. But, you know, there is funding available for our youth. And you know, and I encourage all our youth to take advantage of it regardless. Now, they might have changed the policies today, but I'm not too sure. But I think, you know, if you... apply, it's not as they've taken a little bit of the political stuff away from it, and it's easier to get easier to get access to the education, but there's still an application that you have to fill out, and you know, and you don't get as much as you think you're going to get. You know, there's a lot of administration thing and going on. Like I just went back to school to a self-employment program, and you know I never went through the Métis things because, you know, when I got the application, it was like, wow, I have to have some sort of a purpose behind it, and it was easier for me just to go through the education system just without applying through this. So I found it a little bit easier. But no, I encourage anybody that wants to go back to school. It's the best thing for you to go back if you really need to do stuff. And that's what I encourage. I I look after our elders and make sure our kids go to school and you know, get off the drugs and stuff like that. We don't need that anymore. I mean, that's a rich man's game, and the only one that's making the money are the drug dealers. You know,
well, Dale, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show. We have to come to a close.
Okay.
I'd appreciate you. Thank you for coming on and that I got you on here. We talked about great things about our Métis people.
Good.
I'm going to have you come back again sometime later on again. So anyways, folks, take care. We're going to share some music of our Métis fiddle and our history. And folks, take care. This is Derek Whitesky-Cloud speaking to you from Between Two Worlds on BBSRadio.com. Take care, folks. Be safe.
Bye-bye.
Bye.